Hello, this is Pastor Alan Kane. Esau traded Jacob his birthright for a bowl of soup. Who would do that? We all would if it was the right bowl of soup. That's today's message. I hope you enjoy.
I've been preaching through some of the passages that we hit in the previous week, although this week I'm jumping way back to Genesis. But that's because I was challenged by a message I heard last week, and I want to share some of those thoughts with you. And we're going to look at those things in just a minute. Before I do, I want to see how good your memory is and how well advertising works. All right, so I want you to finish the series of names for me. I'm going to leave the last name off the set. Peter, Paul, and Mary. Okay, very good. Hockman and see, it works. Some of you, anyway, watch TV. Dyer, Garofalo, Mann, and in case you get in a car wreck, you know where to go, right? Sonny and
Chair.
Very good. Romeo and
Juliet.
Well, that was easy. Abbott and
Costello.
That's easy, too. Larry Moe and
Curly.
No, John Linder. Benny and the
Jets.
Oh, I didn't know if anybody could get that one or not. Samson and Donnie and
Marie.
Oh, very good. How about this one? Abraham, Isaac, and
Jacob.
All right.
Four Jacobs, right?
Got four Jacobs in it? Oh, my. That's way too many Jacobs in one place.
Five
Jacobs. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We're going to talk about that concept in just a minute. This past week, I was at Catalyst Seminar, and the theme of it is tension is good, which is really good news for most of us because we got plenty of it, right? It's good to know that it's good. And it's talking about the tension drives us deeper. And tension can be used to our benefit or it can consume us. And one of the things they discussed over the course of that weekend was that our appetites, our desires, can either push us deeper with God or they can ruin us and destroy us. So we're going to talk about this internal tension that we have because of our appetites in our lives. And it's always going to be there. It's a constant part of who we are, these internal struggles, this internal tension that we have as we fight against our appetites, natural appetites sometimes, and we fight to keep them under control. Appetite usually has one word connected with it, and that one word is more. Food, yes, but more. I want more. That's what appetite does. I want more. And those appetites, I think, can be created by God. There's some good appetites, a desire, an appetite for security, to be loved, to be cherished, to be successful. We have that in us, a drive to win. There are the appetites of food. There are appetites for power and prestige and importance. There's appetites for passion and lust. There's appetites for wealth. Just accumulation of stuff. Always more. And we have these appetites in our life that I think God created. Sin distorted them, but God created these appetites within us. And on a certain level, they are correct. In the right place and used at the right time, these appetites are what God gave us. But sin, like everything else, distorted those things. There's three things about appetites I want to share with you today. And you begin yourself in your mind, what are those things right now that seem to have just this overwhelming control in my life? And I want to share three things about the appetites that you and I battle. Number one, I've already shared, that is God created them, but sin has distorted them. We fight these things. And they have an evil bend to them sometimes, our appetites do. The second thing that I think probably is the most important for us to get, kind of like a 12-step program, is that appetites are never finally and fully satisfied. I think it's important for us to understand that, you know, one of the things you got to do to beat your problem is admit you got one, right? It's part of that 12-step program. One thing I think we need to understand as we battle against those things that bring tension into our lives is that no appetite is ever fully or finally satisfied. We always want more. You know, we think that if I could just get that car, then I'd be satisfied. And then we get that car. And by about second or third payment, we're not so satisfied. You know, I remember one time I bought, let's see, what was it? It's about a 94 Ford LTD. And it's the most I had ever paid for a car at that time. It was $4,900 is what I paid for it. Yeah, I was living large. And I bought this car, and I got in the glove compartment after I bought it and found some of the original paperwork. And I found the original bill of sale of the man who bought it. Now, this car only had 50,000 miles on it when I bought it. So it wasn't even, you know, hardly broken in. $18,000 is what this guy had paid for this LTD when he first bought it. $18,000. And I bought it from the third guy that had it in the, you know, he traded it in Florida, went to that dealership. That dealership sold it to a wholesaler, made his money on it. The wholesaler sold it to the guy I bought it from and made money on it. And I bought it for $4,900 and he made money on it. So what did the guy trade it in for? Pretty much zero. And he drove it 50,000 miles. You know, when he first bought that car, he probably, man, you know, this is it. I finally got the big car, all the bells and whistles, it's everything. And, you know, this is going to satisfy my desire for a car for the rest of my life. And where this guy, this man I bought from, he always bought it down in the community where all the people go to retire. And so they're all big cars, low miles, because they don't drive them much. And they're all nice. And he probably thought, this is the last car I'm ever going to buy. And he bought it, paid $18,000 for it, and traded it in for next to nothing because eventually he wanted another one. All appetites are like that. We think that if we can just have this, that we will finally and fully be satisfied. But the problem with appetites, they know one word, and that one word is more. Appetites are never finally and fully satisfied. We believe that there's something out there, that if we could just find it, if we could just have it, if we could just be with them, then we would finally and fully be satisfied. But one of the real truths about appetites is they are never finally and fully satisfied. Another thing about appetites that I think we need to understand as we look at this lesson from Genesis is that your appetites always whisper now, never later. You want it now. And Americans are really bad at later. We want everything now. The things that our parents had after 30, 40 years, we think we should have at 18 when we get out of the house. And appetites always whisper that to us. What are those things we struggle with? Always are whispering to us, now, now, now. You need it now. It never whispers later. That's what appetites do. They want more and they want it now. Sounds like a kid, doesn't it? I want more and I want it now. Maybe it sounds like your mate. Maybe it sounds like you. I want it more and I want it now. Your ability to control your appetites and your response to those appetites will determine the direction of your life. You can lose your family, your jobs, your ministry, your integrity if you don't manage your appetites. If we can't come to the conclusion that one more thing will not bring us satisfaction, there is nothing outside of a relationship with Jesus Christ, in my mind, that can ever fully satisfy. That when we learn to be content in Him, whether we have plenty or little, Paul says, that is where true contentment comes in our relationship with Christ. And until we fight our appetites and make the decision in our mind that one other person or that one more thing or that new job or that bigger position or a larger church or whatever it may be, if we can finally say, you know what, if appetites are never fully and finally satisfied, then I'm not going to let them control my life. You've all done it. You've had that thing, right? I got it now. I've worked and I got it. And before long, you're thinking, it's just another thing. Didn't it? I was so excited when I got my 70 Fairlane. And I still love it, but I think, I hardly drive it. I actually said the other day, I'm not sure why I have this. I don't drive it enough. And I couldn't wait to get it. What is that? It's that appetites are never fully satisfied. And it was eye-opening as we talked about this, that why do we let those control our lives then if we're not really going to get satisfied by them? And if we don't learn to control our appetites, we can lose everything right now that we believe and have chosen to be the most important things to us. We can lose them all if we're not careful with our appetites. Turn to Genesis chapter 25. I want to share a story that some of you may be familiar with. Maybe some of you be the first time you've ever heard this story. The story of Jacob and Esau and a bowl of stew. It's one of the worst trades ever made in human history. And it, you know, you look at the story, you don't, oh, who would do this? This seems silly. If you remember, there was Abraham, who was the father of Isaac, and Isaac had Jacob and Esau. Esau was the older brother, Jacob was the younger brother. Esau was a rugged outdoorsman. Jacob cooked and stayed home and worked the tent with his mom. Two different kinds of guys. And they both had their own lives and their own things. And that's where we find them. We find Jacob and Esau in Genesis chapter 25. We'll start at verse 27. Now when the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a peaceful man, living in tents. Now Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Yeah, he was a mama's boy. That's what it means right there. When Jacob had cooked stew, Esau came in from the field and he was famished. And he said to Esau said to Jacob, please let me have a little swallow of that red stuff there, for I am famished. Therefore, his name was called Edom, which means red. But Jacob said, first sell me your birthright. Esau said, behold, I am about to die. So what of what use then is a birthright to me? And Jacob said, first swear to me. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank, and rose up and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. This story is built around the concept of a birthright. There's really no equivalent in modern day culture. Birthright had a very specific set of rules about it, and it was the firstborn is who was the one who got the right of being born first. Not that he deserved it, but it was his birthright because he was first. Birthright meant you got at least twice the amount of inheritance that your brothers and sisters got. So if you're part of a wealthy family, as soon as the inheritance came, you're already at least twice as rich as the rest of your brothers and sisters. And often three times the blessing you got. So that's one of the things that the birthright brought. A double, maybe triple inheritance from your father. The second thing that it gave you, the birthright, that we need to understand to get this story, is that it gave you authority in your family. You became the father in the place of your dad. Basically, it made you judge. You didn't sit around as a family and everybody, you know, vote on what happens. If you were the one who had the birthright, you were the one who made the rules in the family. Amber's thinking, that's me. Unfortunately, back then, it had the firstborn son. Sorry. But we don't do that in this culture. Just letting you know. And so, not only did he get double, triple inheritance, he would get from his father, Jacob. From his father, Isaac. There we go. Abraham, Isaac, Isaac. But he would become authority in his home. The third thing was, in a very unique sense, that you received a blessing from God. It was almost as if God had no choice but to put his blessing on you. Not quite true, but there was a blessing that the father would speak over the firstborn son, and that God would bless that child in beautiful ways. So we find these two boys. One's in there, he's just made some lentil stew. Not sure exactly what that is, but it must have smelled really good, and had some bread. Esau comes in from the field, where he's been out in the open country, it says. And he comes in and he says to his brother, I'm famished. Now, to truly understand the story, you probably have to be a younger brother. How many younger brothers do we have in here? All right, I was the older brother. I was Esau. in this story. Now, those of you who are younger brothers probably already see an opportunity opening here at the moment. Because rarely ever does the older brother ever need the younger brother. In fact, they're pretty much in a nuisance. A nuisance to him. My brother called me this week, and I can't remember what we were talking about, but in fact, I was talking to him on the phone when I hit Lance in the eye with a screwdriver. If you see that mark under his eye, yeah, the preacher did it, so don't mess with me. He says, I can't wait to go to work and tell everybody the preacher hit me. If you're so bad that the preacher hits you, you need to turn your life around, brother. Anyway, I was talking to Lance, and I can't remember how we got on the subject, and I said, that's my annoying brother. I said, he's the one who always used to cross the center line of the bed when we were little, and I'd get mad at him every morning. Or, no, he'd get mad at me, you know. And so I'd wait for him to wake up, and I'd stick my finger across the halfway point. I'm touching your side, you know. And he pretty much was a nuisance to me at that time. And I'm sorry, Mark, if you're listening to this. But, you know, we never needed the younger brother. And those rare moments when the older brother would need the younger brother, the light comes on. Golden opportunity. I got the power. And so you start to think, what can I bargain for here? All right, let me drive your truck. You know, let me have your room. Let me have your vet, you know, your letter, you know, whatever it is, you start at the top. You start with the highest thing possible. In case they say no, then you can work your way down. Because now the younger brother's got power. The older brother needs something the younger brother has that's never happened before. He goes, comes in, he goes, I'm famished. And so Jacob starts thinking, what can I ask for? What's the most valuable thing that Esau has that I would like? Give me your birthright, and I'll give you a bowl of this fine stew. What moron would take that deal? Especially as an older brother. Either you give me the stew or I take the stew. That would have been my response. For whatever reason, that didn't happen. And it's because his appetite, physically at this moment, was so great, and we're going to talk about this concept in a minute, that he was so focused on that, that everything else kind of got blurred off into the sides. And all he could think of was, I want that food. And he actually says it. He says it here. He said, first sell me your birthright. And Esau, verse 32, said to him, behold, I am about to die, so what use is a birthright to me? First of all, brother, you walked into camp. You're not about to die. If you walk in here, you're probably going to be all right for another few minutes. But there's this thing that goes on. We're going to talk about it in just a second. That when our passions, our appetites get a hold of us, we do stupid, really stupid things. And he says, what good is a birthright? Inheritance later, authority later, blessings of God later. Those are all later things. Why would I worry about later things if I die? I'm going to die today because of lack of food. That seems to make sense on some level. He says, so what good is a birthright to me? And you know, that's down the road, and we think very short term when our appetites get control of us. What good is a birthright down there if I die today? He says, so sell me your birthright. Fine. He says, no, first swear to me that you'll give me your birthright. And he does. And you think, how stupid to trade all 2-3 times the inheritance, the authority, and the blessings of God for a bowl of soup. Like I said, probably one of the dumbest trades in all the world. Who would throw away their future? Their family. Their standing in the community. Their integrity. Their ministry. Their marriage. For a bowl of stew. You would. If it was the right bowl of stew. If you're not careful. We can look at this story and think, there's no way I'd give all that up for a bowl of soup. But there are things out there that are dogging you right now that you're actually considering trading your integrity and your family and possibly your ministry and your relationship with people around you for something that will turn out to be a bowl of stew to you later on. No one is immune from this. In fact, your appetites become larger than life. In fact, there's scientific explanation for what happens. There's one thing called impact bias that scientists have found out. That there are chemical changes take place in your brain that magnifies our desires, our appetites, to make us think it will satisfy us much more than it really does. Actually, chemical change. When our mind gets focused on something, we get to this point where we think, you know, if I got to have this. You ever thought that? I have to have this. Because we think, man, if I just have that, I would be satisfied. Finally and fully satisfied. And there's actually a chemical change that happens in our brain that magnifies that process to make it think it on a scale it's an 8 or 9. In reality, it's probably a 2 or 3. But there's something chemically that happens in us. I think it's also from the hand of our enemy that makes us think this. It actually happens. It's called impact bias. We get biased towards a particular impact that's hitting us, visually or whatever it is, mentally. A chemical change takes place. There's also a thing called focalism, where our mind will get an appetite in it and we will focus on one thing and everything else becomes blurry. We can shut off the fact that, you know, I'm a person of integrity. We can shut off the fact that I'm already married. We can shut off the fact that I would never do this in other circumstances. We begin to compartmentalize and just actually blur all those things. And all of a sudden we're focused on one thing. And everything else becomes blurry. It's chemical in our brain that gets encouraged by these appetites. And all we can think is, I gotta have this. So scientists even see these things chemically taking place. No one is immune from the effects of appetite. And so Esau is in this focalism, this impact bias moment, and he's just chucking future for the right now. And he said, what good's a birthright to me if I'm dead? Yeah. I'll trade you for a bowl of stew, my triple inheritance, my authority, and the blessing in the hand of God. And he makes the trade, or is getting ready to make the trade. I just wish I could drop in, or you could drop in from 2010 into that moment when he's about ready to take the bowl and the spoon and the bread and getting ready to make that deal. If we could just drop in from 2010 and say, hold on just a minute, Esau. Hold on just a minute. I know you're hungry, but before you eat that bowl of soup, I got to explain a couple things to you. Real quick, just... I know you're famished and about to die. We roll our eyes. No, just hang on. If you can just hang on and not take this trade, in a little while you're going to have 12 sons. And those 12 boys are going to become 12 tribes of a nation that God's going to call out. Actually called out to your grandfather, but your kids are going to be the 12 tribes that rule the nation of Israel. And they'll become a great nation. And eventually, though, they're going to get sold into slavery. And they're going to be in Egypt for a while. And they're going to be there actually for 400 years. And they'll know their God, but they kind of get distant from him. But eventually, God's going to call a man named Moses out. Stay with me, Esau. I know you're hungry. Hang in there. He's going to call name Moses. Say Moses with me. All right, thank you, Esau. You're tracking, all right? He's going to call Moses out. And he's going to call him from a burning bush. And he's out in the wilderness. And he's going to call him up to the bush and he's going to eventually tell him, I want you to go back and set my people free and you're going to bring them to a promised land. But this God is going to call Moses up to the mountain. And when he calls him up to the mountain, he's going to introduce to himself to Moses. And he's going to say to Moses, Moses, hi, I'm God. I'm not just any God. I'm the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Esau. Lineage is going to be forever connected with who our God is. And he's going to tell Moses, I'm the father of Abraham, Isaac, and Esau. And he's going to call them out. They're going to go set the people free. Not only that, they're going to get out. They're going to get to the promised land. They're going to be a great nation. But 2,000 years from now, Esau, I know you're hungry. Hang on just a minute. 2,000 years from about this year, God's going to finally bring the Messiah that's going to save the world. And he's going to call one of his disciples to write about it, and his name is going to be Matthew. Say Matthew with me, Moses. And Moses and Matthew, Esau, Satan, that's who they are. And Matthew's going to write a book, and he's going to talk about the genealogy of Jesus Christ. And he's going to say that Jesus, you know, descendant of David, who is the descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Esau. Eat that bowl of soup. You think you hate your brother now? All that changes. Oh, I didn't know that. If you eat this one bowl of soup today, when Moses speaks to God, God will say, I'm the father of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. When Matthew writes the genealogy of Jesus Christ, he's going to say, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Are you willing to trade that for a bowl of soup today? My guess is, if somebody would have dropped in and explained some explaining to do, did that for him, explained what he would be giving up by one bowl of soup that one moment, he would never. In fact, I think it would have been better for him to die than to eat that bowl of soup. The birthright was his. It would be Abraham, Isaac, and Esau. Everywhere in Scripture you see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it would be Abraham, Isaac, and Esau. And he traded that for a bowl of soup because he would just close his eyes and la, 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 la to the things of the future and said, I want what I want right now. My appetite is overwhelming. I just want a bowl of soup. You can have my birthright. And you know what? He did. And it is now Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We have no clue. We have, young people, we have no clue what a very small decision in one moment in our life can do to change our destiny forever. Every decision we make needs to be filtered through what the God of all creation has in mind for us. You think, look, there are two guys in a tent out in the middle of the wilderness of Israel. Now, one bowl of soup one day is really not going to make any difference. It made all the difference in the world. One small decision can set our course for the rest of our life, for good or for ill. What's your bowl of soup? What's your bowl of soup? What I did when I dropped in and talked to Esau was I reframed his appetite. Put a different frame around it. Right now, you're seeing I'm hungry and there's soup. Let me reframe it for you. This is what you're going to give up if you trade that. The problem is you and I don't always have people dropping in every day when we're getting ready to make stupid decisions based on our appetites. To say, look, let me reframe this for a moment. If you do this one decision today, 5 years from now, you will have lost your wife and your kids and your home and your job. If you make this decision today, that's where it'll lead. Now, if someone were to drop in your life as you're getting ready to make those kind of decisions and told you that, you'd say, you know what? Oh, wow, that puts it in a whole other framing there. I'm not willing to trade all those things for this moment. That's what today is for. Hopefully to help you remind yourself and to reframe for yourself what those kind of decisions make when we walk outside of the will of God. That's why I had Psalm 84 read. Better is one day in your house than 1,000 elsewhere. Better is one day as a gatekeeper in the temple of the Lord than 1,000 days in the tents of the wicked. We think we're trading 1,000 days for one, and it's a better deal. Not if it's in the tent of the wicked. Not if it's outside of the will of God. Our appetites lie to us, basically, is what this is teaching us, that focalism and the impact bias. All those things tell us, when it thinks we're going to give us an 8 feeling and it gives us a 2, our appetites lie to us. Our enemy lies to us. To do what? Harm. We're being lied to with our appetites. We need to reframe them. Like I said, we have no idea what hangs in the smallest decisions that we make. What can we do today then to reframe these things? First thing, I think we have to admit to the truth that no appetite is ever fully and finally satisfied. Therefore, I will not let them control my life. You got to just say that to yourselves. Look, I know I don't feel it at the moment. It seems that if I just could have that, I'd be happy and satisfied. But you need to tell yourself, nothing will ever be fully satisfied in terms of my appetites. Therefore, I'm not going to let them control my life. I'm going to make decisions based on the truth that that is not true. Secondly, we need to begin to reframe our appetites in a broader scope of what God is calling us and how He's called us to live. We need to look long term, not cover our eyes and put our fingers in our ears and la 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 and not. I'm just not going to look at the future. All I know is I want this and I want it now. And we make those decisions, small decisions, one after another. And before long, we are in a place we never intended to be, losing the things that we decided were most important to us. We need to reframe our appetites. And the clearer the framing can be, the less the appetites have control on us. The more we tell ourselves who we are and who we're not and what God has called us to and what He has not called us to, the clearer those framings can be around our appetites, the more we have control and the less they have control over us. There are opportunities out there that will pull you away from God that God has not called you. And they're not necessarily wrong. We're talking about evil things, but sometimes they're just callings to things that we know God hasn't called to, but we want them because it will serve our appetite. It's a bigger place. And I always joke about that. One I heard a pastor say before, you know, it's interesting that God always calls pastors to bigger churches with better pay. He never calls them backwards. And that's very few. It's because it's not necessarily always a calling. It's, I want a bigger church. I want more. Because appetites always have one word, and that word is more. And it's now, never later. The things that call us that God hasn't called us to. And we think, well, it's bigger and better, and you know, I'll do this. When God's saying, no, it's not going to bring you, you think that's going to give you an 8 or 9 satisfaction, but if I'm not there, it'll be 2 or 1 or 0. Don't do it. And we need to be careful. We need to reframe that. What's your bowl of stew? What's being held out to you right now that's so hard for you to say no to? What are you trying to talk yourself into? You see, those things happen in our mind. Our passions, our appetites say, I want it, but we know it's not. So our heart tells our mind, okay, give me some reasons. I need some good reasons to do what I want to do. You know, help me out here. Support my theory. What is it right now that you are battling against that's hard for you to say no to? Here's something that the Lord put on my heart. Is your appetite that's eating you alive? Is it money issues that ruin your family and your respect? Steal maybe to get, or be dishonest to get, or spend what you don't have, and 5 years down the road, you'll have lost your family and everything you care about. Is it worth it to trade? Maybe it's food appetites. Yeah, I'm preaching to me first. We have this appetite that we just, you know, we crave the food usually because of other issues. They'll rob your family of their loved one, of you, of your self-respect and control. If someone were to drop in and say, look, here's what's happening down the road 5, 10 years from now. It's not Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob anymore, Esau anymore, it's Jacob. And you could see long-term what could be and what couldn't be if you don't make some changes. Reframe your appetites that have control over you, Alan. Reframe them. Look at them in a different way. And I'm trying very hard to do that right now. Encourage your prayers. Maybe it's money. Maybe it's food. Maybe it's lying or dishonesty at your job so you can get more and get another position of more importance that may leave you down the road devastated when it's found out and your family ashamed. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? Who is she? Who is he? That right now you're thinking, and if I just had them instead of the one I have, then I would be fully and finally satisfied. I know what you're thinking. Yeah, but they're an 8, a 9, they're a 10. You know, then let me tell you, they're not. If it's outside the will of God, they're 0, 1, 2, or 3 at the best. And if they were here and I was talking to them, guess what? I'd tell them you were 2, 2, and not a 10. We think that if we can get out of this and get to something else, And often in relationships, this is where we lose everything that we hold in value to us now. If I could just have that, then I'd be satisfied. And then you get that, and you find out you still have to wake up with them every morning. And they're not always that beautiful when they wake up. First, one of those terrifying... Dobson called it, you're jumping from one straight life to another. You get married, and some of that first excitement wears off, and then you meet someone new, and it's all tingly. As Disney put it, you're Twitter-pated. And it's so exciting over there that it seems like if I could just have that 8 or 10, that would satisfy me. So you jump out of this one, you go get that one, and after a while, that 8 or 10 becomes that new car smell, gets pretty stinky. After a few, all of a sudden, we're back to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever. And, okay, I got to get another one because apparently this one wasn't right either. The problem is it's been lying to you all along. There isn't a one that will fully and finally satisfy you. It's a call to work on what you got. And to let God be involved and not to go outside of His will. Better is one day in the house of God than 1,000 elsewhere. Our appetites lie to us. And if we're not careful and to reframe them and to look at them for what they really are, they can destroy our lives and make us lose the very things that are of most value to us. It'll destroy your legacy. We're sitting here today, 2010, talking about Esau and how stupid he was. What do your grandkids say about you if you make that decision you're thinking about making? Ample missed it. And look what he's caused to our family because of it. Or grandma. Look what she did. What do your kids say about you? What do your grandkids say about you? Well, have you lost your legacy, the integrity, the very things, standing in your community, your ministry, whatever? Because you let your appetites control you, the very appetites that most often are lying to you because they are never fully and finally satisfying. Don't let your younger brother take what's supposed to have been yours from the hand of God. Don't trade your future for a bowl of stew. You've been listening to What Would You Trade for a Bowl of Soup? A ministry of Lawrenceville Church of God, Springfield.